all the hackers and the crackers. To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, hitting firewalled hoe. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. You see, G, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial code, source code, ISOs, RAS, SIP, SIS. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
And we are back once again this week with Binary Revolution Radio. I am Stank Dog, and this is episode 67. Coming to you on, let's see, what month is this? October 17th, 2004. That's our original air date. And I have a new co-host on the show this week who's actually a pretty good friend of mine that we've dealt with quite a few things in the past. El Diablo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. What's up to everybody?
Yep, and we got actually a very interesting topic, something we've talked about before for our main topic later on. But before we get to that, you know, we have our little format. I go through my housekeeping at the beginning, so let me just drop a couple things here off the bat. First of all, this is going to be the last episode before Freaknik. Freaknik, gosh, is it 8? I think it's 8.
Yep, 8 it is.
Yeah, I think it's Freaknik 8. Wow, can you believe they've had 8 of these things? So, this is going to be the last show before Freaknik, and I will be in Nashville, Tennessee for Freaknik the whole weekend, actually Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So, boy, next week's show is going to be on little or no sleep. I don't know. I can't make any promises or guarantees on the quality of next week's show, that's for sure. But this one's going to be good. We'll make up for it with this one. But if you're going to Freaknik, I actually volunteered a while back, and I confirmed I'm going to be working at the registration desk, up at the front registration desk from 10 till 12 in the morning, Friday morning, before the con starts, getting people signed up and registered. So make sure you stop by and say hi. Of course, you really don't have a choice, do you, if you're going to register and get in. I guess you're going to have to pass by me. So seriously, stop by, say hi 10 to 12, and then 12 o'clock is when the con starts, so I'm going to make a beeline upstairs to hear the opening statements, introduction, and start with some really, really cool presentations. I'm looking forward to it. Now, you're not going to be able to make it, is that right?
Nah, unfortunately, I can't make it, man. Nah, wish I could.
Nah, it's happened to a lot of people, man. Work kind of overlaps sometimes, but hey, you do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, what's that old saying? Work sucks.
Yeah, that's, I don't know how old that is, but it's a classic, that's for sure. That's a universal truth, I think, is what they call that.
That's what it is.
Okay, what else do we have for... I also wanted to give shouts early here, give thanks to a new show notes writer that we have, Joe, who's I know is a very good guy. He's going to take over writing show notes, or he's going to try as best he can. Again, we all have our hands tied with work and time and stuff. So Joe's written a couple sections of notes for some of the past episodes. Other people have tried, you know, come up with one or two here or there, but they weren't able to come up with the rest of them for whatever reason. You know, again, real life takes over, no big deal. So Joe's going to work on it for a little while. And like I said, I've already got a couple up there. So far, so good. And believe me, I know people get frustrated with the show not having any notes because you only want to listen to the ones, some people that is, only want to listen to the ones that have topics of interest to them. And you know what? I can't blame them for that. I'm the same way. So I get frustrated when I can't find show notes. Hell, on my own show, for crying out loud. I'm like, which show did I talk about that on? I want to go back and find it, and I don't even have my own show notes. So I get frustrated with that as well. So thank you to Joe for helping out with some of these. And as fast as he get them to me, I'm trying to get them up as quick as I can. I have to go through them a little bit afterwards just to add the URLs and stuff like that. So I'm putting them up as fast as he sends them to me, so thanks to him. And that's it for the general housekeeping. Now, let's, oh, wait a minute, we have email theme music here. Let me play this before we go to the email. Okay, and now, our first email this week comes from... Actually, I think all of our email this week comes from people's real names that I blocked out, just in case. Just to play it safe, because, you know, not everybody's out there. And the first one comes from a real name with Held, number one, who says, "Stank Dog, I subscribe to 2600 Mag, and I love it, so when I saw your site and started to listen to your shows, I was hooked. I listen to you and your co-hosts every week, at home or at work. BenRev has become my church." Yeah! "But I have wanted to drop you a line about your mags that I ordered. They were delivered fast, and they look great. I ordered all three issues, and I have to say you and your crew have done an outstanding job. I can't wait until the next issue is out."
Hallelujah!
Hallelujah! Welcome to the church! And you know, and actually this is... You know, first of all, thank you for the kind words. You know, I say that all the time, and I do appreciate it. But the reason I wanted to read this on the air is because I wanted to show people that BenRev and 2600 can coexist. You know, that's the thing, that sometimes we get an email about, you know, competing with 2600, or you're not as good as 2600, or you're better than 2600. You know what? They're two different entities, you know? I write for 2600. You know, I'm official writer for 2600. I write for Blacklisted 411. I write BenRev, et cetera, et cetera. They all can coexist. It's not like a competition thing to me. And I've said before, I want as much information as I can get my hands on. So I look at this as just another source, another outlet, another alternative.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and it's and you know what? This is a good... You and I have talked about this offline before, but it's kind of like the idea of the DEF CON meeting or the 2600 meeting.
Absolutely.
No, it doesn't have to be an or situation. Why can't it be both?
Yeah, it's all good. Why is there any it's this ain't a football game or anything. This is an information, it's a collaboration of, you know, people coming together to talk about different things related to the information we're interested in. So, you know, what difference does it make, you know, 2600, DEF CON? Hey, the point is get out there. The point is collaborate. The point is learn, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And some places I know have... it runs the gamut. Some places, they're diametrically opposed. The DEF CON people hate the 2600 people and vice versa, which I think is just bizarre. But hey, whatever, that's me. I know other places, like I believe Phoenix, for example... I think what they have done is kind of joined one big meeting. They call it the DEF CON / 2600 / whatever meeting. It's just a hackers meeting. And all of them kind of come together because I guess there was a... they weren't sure where some wanted to meet in one place and some in another. And ended up they just all got together and it's a lot of the same crowd. And,
Sense, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's... You know, that's why, you know, it's brought up on the last show about BenRev meetings. It's like... I don't really know why we should, you know, if people want to do that and add that name to it, I mean, I'm honored. I think that's great. But just meet with other hackers and call it, you know, I don't care if you call it, you know, fish in a bucket meeting. I don't, as long as you can get together with people and talk about hacking, you know, that's what it's all about. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, that is the point, so.
Yeah, so, yeah, and also, I every time somebody mentions about the magazine and how good the magazine looks or how much they like the magazine, I absolutely have to stand back and just pimp Logan 5 again. Logan 5 is the man. He is completely, and when I say completely, I mean 100% totally responsible for the way that the magazine looks, cover to cover, inside and out, layout, design, it's all Logan 5. If it wasn't for him and you guys relied on me to do it, you'd have pure ASCII text with a bunch of retarded stick figures mixed in.
Much respect to Logan 5.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? And there's nothing wrong with the all text thing too if you're going to do an online zine, but yeah, for the printed thing, he's got the skills, man. Really.
Stop.
Absolutely.
Stop.
Phenomenal. Yeah, and since we are now your church, you can go ahead and expect we're going to send you an offering plate any day now. So just go ahead and fill it up with all your loose bills and, you know what? Even your non-loose bills. Loosen some up, send us in.
We're working on the theme music.
Yeah. Okay. Hallelujah. Now, I can't do that voice for the whole show. I think I'd end up blowing out my larynx or something.
Hey, it'd be interesting, man. Come on, just one show.
I don't know. Let me see if I can pull this off. All right, we have our second email. No, I can't do it. My throat's going to give. Hold on, I need a drink now.
And now the Reverend.
Don't make me laugh when I'm drinking. I almost spit iced tea all over the place. Okay, the second email from Real Name Withheld, number two. He says, "Hey all, just shooting you an email to tell you that you make my work days go by so much better. I live in Canada, and I work at the Best Buy Rebate Processing Center." Yikes, I hope I'm supposed to read that. No, he sent it to the radio. I think that's okay to read that.
Well, he's withheld anyway, man.
Yeah, I guess that's true, yeah. If you've ever sent a rebate away from Best Buy, it came our way. So that's, yeah, the Best Buy Rebate Process Center. And since they let us listen to music while we work, I've been listening to your program, as well as other like-minded ones, RFA, Default, Games and More, Entertainment Radio, It's Gamer Radio, of course, Good Friends of RC4. I have to say that I like your program best of them all. The personalities really come through, and I feel more of a connection with this show. I just ordered your magazines, and I'll expect they'll be just as good. Thanks for making my life better, guys.
Awesome, man.
Well, you know, actually, this is impromptu. I didn't think about this until I read this a second time. Guys, I just realized we've never had a chick co-host on here. What the hell's up with that?
That's just wrong, dude.
Dude, I gotta do something about that.
Yes. Put that up there in your priorities list.
I'm gonna when I'm at Freaknik this weekend, I'm gonna find somebody to hook up with to be a co-host for the show. We'll see what we can do with that. I can get chicks, but I don't know any chicks that are in compute. You know, that could. That's a tough one. Anyway, that one came out. That one came off the cuff there. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that you work at Best Lie. I'm sorry about all that. But, you know, at least they let you listen to stuff. That's a good thing. You know, I so totally relate to that statement because I'm a programmer. I mean, the regular listeners know I'm a senior programmer analyst. I'm sitting behind code all day long. So I'm listening to music and to radio shows all day long. So I'm one of you. I'm listening to this kind of stuff as well. So I totally, totally relate to what you're saying. And I'm glad that, you know, we can put out a show each week so far, knock on wood, each week that, you know, I guess some people like, some people don't. Don't worry. I'm sure of that, too. As a matter of fact, I know that for a fact. But we just try to make the best show we can each week, and I'm glad you're listening to it. And by all means, hey, maybe other people in your processing center there will listen and pick them up as well, share it, get it out there.
Join the revolution.
Yeah, exactly. So by all means, spread it, you know. Burn copies of it to CD. I know some people have emailed me saying they've done that. Burn copies to CD and hand them out, or leave them on a desk at computer shows or trade shows or things like that. That's great ideas, great stuff like that. You know, it's a show for people to listen to. We don't charge money. We don't sell advertising. It's just me getting pissed off at whatever the flavor of the month is, cussing for an hour, and hopefully slip in a little education in between all of it.
Right.
Okay, anyway, let's move on. This email, okay, this is not from a real name, actually, so I lied earlier. Our final email this week is from Delusion, I guess is his handle, I'm pretty sure. And this was actually like a two or three page email that is just way too long to read on the air. You can go to delusion.com, that's DELUSION.com, to read the full version of this rant. It's posted on his website and his blog anyway, so you can go there and check it out if you want to follow along or if you want to see what it's about. But basically, and I'll just read one quote from it, and he basically says, quote, "Ogg Vorbis is a solution desperately in search of a problem." Now, this is kind of a cliched statement that people make sometimes, you know, where there's a really cool invention that comes out, but there's no real... Yeah, there's no real application for it. There's nothing that you can actually do for it. I'm not really sure. I mean, he goes on to say, I mean, I think the title of the rant is Og Vorbis is Evil or something like that. And I don't really, I don't know where that comes from. I think that's a little drama, I guess, put in for writing, for good writing. Some, what do they call it? Literature, creative.
Creative literature?
Yeah, well, I can't, what are the creative license? Is that what the
creative license.
Yeah, I took a little creative license there.
Of course.
So, I'm not sure exactly what is evil about it, but basically, and please, by all means, I don't mean to sum this up, go check out his full rant. I'm don't want to leave anything out, so I apologize if I do, but basically the gist of it to me was, and there were some valid points in there, don't get me wrong, he was basically saying that MP3 is already here. It already exists. It's out there. It's in widespread use. And he's pointing out the fact that we don't need Og Vorbis. MP3 is there. He admits and agrees that, yes, it's copywritten. The algorithms are all licensed, you know, have to have license and yada, yada, yada. And that's terrible. And you know, he admits all that and agrees with that. But he's basically saying that it doesn't matter because it's already out there too much that the audience exists for MP3s. And he's very much right to a certain extent. Well, not even to... No, he's very much right. There's no debating that. It is out there. And I don't think that it's going to go anywhere anytime soon either. But, I mean, we can't... I mean, we'd be remiss to give some credit to Og Vorbis for that, to be quite honest. What I mean is that... The reason, one of the reasons anyway, that MP3 is still here, I mean, the main reason is because it came first.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. The real reason is because it came out first. It was the first thing that came out that did this job. So that's where it started from, and that's all, you know, I don't think you can really debate that a whole lot. But as it caught on and people started putting their hands out, wanting their money for it, that's when people started realizing the potential danger for this, that they could shut the door on MP3. They have not to date? No, they haven't, because it really grew so fast and it's very hard and we've been through that. The RAA hasn't given up trying to crack down on stuff like this, but I think they kind of somewhat realized that they can't catch every licensee of the MP3 encoder, etc.
Yep.
However, it's important to give some credit to Og Vorbis, and I'll tell you why. It's kind of like, the metaphor I came up with is this. It's think about that cop car that's on the side of the road. Sometimes, I mean, have you ever seen this? Do they have this now where you're at, where they have a cop car on the side of the road, and the cop's not even in it?
Yep.
They just park it on the side of the road.
Well, yeah, because it works, right?
And exactly, because people see that, and just, they slow down simply because of the existence of the cop car. It works. It's effective. There's no denying that, right?
Yep.
If you push your luck, you try to speed past a cop, you could get busted, you could get in trouble, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
Well, it's the same, this is the way I compare the same thing with Og Vorbis. They're not going to push MP3 too hard and try to crack down on the licensees so badly because they know that there exists an alternative in Og Vorbis. They have a potential competitor, and it's as good, if not better, than MP3. Now, he also mentions in his rant some very valid points about, is it really better than MP3? And quite frankly, I didn't really notice a big difference. And yes, I compared them. I think some of the differences are overrated and they're something that only real high-end people would notice. Have you ever compared the two?
Yes.
And what do you, I mean, do you notice a difference?
It's, like you said, it's something that is only audible, you know, in a studio environment, for the most part. You know, it's not something that's gonna that you're gonna notice. It's not like saying, you know, an old tape or anything, you know.
Right, and they're both lossy compression formats.
Yep.
You know, so you can record it. I mean, no matter what, you're not gonna get as high a quality when you're ripping it to either one of these formats as you would with the originals.
That is correct.
So if you want your originals, you're not gonna be able to replace them with either one of these. So comparing them to that, you know, trying to say that the quality of this on the high end is better than this on the high end. Well, you know what? If quality's your baby, don't use lossy compression in the first place.
Yeah, that's a big misconception.
Yeah. That's just not, you know. So I do agree with him on that point. If you're compressing it to make a smaller file size, to me, and I probably will get some some hate mail or feedback on this disagreeing with me, but to me, a 128 MP3 sounds just as good as an Aug Vorbis. They don't. The Aug doesn't sound any better to me on that level. Even higher levels. I personally, as a person who just listens to music on their computer quite a bit, you know, and on, in my car stereo, stuff like that, I really could notice very, very little difference. But again, the whole point of this is I just wanted to add to it. I agree with most of what he said, a lot of what he said, but I don't think Aug Vorbis is evil in any way, shape, or form. I think that was, again, some dramatic license. But the simple fact that it exists gives an alternative. If they do decide to really crack down on MP3, you know what? Then Aug will take off.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? I think I probably know what prompted me. We had an episode of this with Jason Scott and I from TextFiles.com, which we haven't pimped him in a long time. Go check him out. We did an episode where we talked about compression and comparing some of this stuff. I don't know if he listened to that and that prompted him to go on this rant, or he just generally had enough of hearing it. Because you know what? Sometimes, I mean, I'll just be blunt. Sometimes these Aug people can really be forceful.
I was waiting for the word.
Yeah, I'm going to be blunt, but I'm not going to be rude. Sometimes they can be real Bible thumpers. They can really come in and try to preach to you about how great Aug Vorbis is and yada, yada, yada. It's great because it's a free alternative. I'll give it that. And it does as good, if not a better job than MP3. Yes. Should we all run out and convert right away? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. However, I will go on to admit that I am still in the process of converting the show. I've said many times, I'm not going to drop MP3. It's too widespread, and I want as many people to listen to the show as possible. However, I'm going to try to start putting up both.
Well, how many MP3 players do you know that play Aug?
Yeah, unfortunately, not enough. And you know, that's again where they're trying to push Aug and get it out there on a lot of these devices. You know what? I mean, you know, there's probably more that play the, is it WMA? The Windows Media Audio, is that what it is? I mean, most of the car players nowadays will play MP3s and WMA before they'll play Aug.
Well, so, obviously, again, you know, digital licensing rights and all that good stuff in there with WMA.
Right. But I think you can still rip to WMA without and avoid the DRM stuff somewhat.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure. I've never done it, so I won't try to wax intellectual on that topic. But yeah, that's really, there's not really much more I can add to that. But again, it is definitely, he does have a lot of valid points. Again, it's delusion.com if you want to read the full thing. And a delusion, I don't know if that's the site name or his handle or both. So I'm just going to call him Delusion and say thank you for the email, Delusion. And that's going to be it for the mailbag this week. Some good stuff, very, very good things. And let's see, the show and tell, I tell you what, why don't you start off with the show and tell, because I know you've got a lot of stuff going on, and yeah, I think it's probably better if you start.
Alright, so yeah, there's a bunch of stuff we can kind of talk about.
Yeah, what has been occupying your time lately?
Well, most of my time lately has been occupied writing a class for a company I work for, which is basically a penetration testing class, better known as hacking class. Depends on which side of things you want to market it as, but for the most part, they currently have a hacking class, and like many companies out there, or quite a few companies out there, really worldwide, it's only a handful of companies that are successful in offering hacking classes, and they are more of a certification shop, so with that comes the fact that there's a certification at the end of every class. So I've been rather busy writing a new class and at the same time working with some of these certification authorities as to some sort of certification path that'll be there along with the class that I'm writing now, which is more of an advanced level. A lot of these classes are more written for your entry-level security people. For example, you know, your system administrators or system programmers or network administrators, because they're tasked with the security of their equipment, the security of their systems, the security of their programs, which, you know, lo and behold, I think should all realize that we're all tasked with, regardless of what it is we implement in any location. I think, you know, security of those systems, which whatever they may be and whatever they may do, should be something that, number one, should be of interest, and number two, should be a major concern. It is certainly a risk for the companies we work for. So,
all right, and we're actually going to talk about that. I should go ahead and let them know that is going to be our main topic, is to go into some more detail about what these classes contain, why they're offered, you know, and kind of, well, we'll kind of play a little devil's advocate here and kind of discuss in detail some of the questions that people have and some of the ideas around it.
Excellent. So, one of the things we can kind of talk about is, okay, classes are all good, and whether, you know, we have a security background, meaning a hacking background, or that of working in it, meaning it at work. So, then, you know, these classes, of course, are, you know, sometimes they're kind of a recap, if you want to call it that, after a certain amount of time of working on specific projects. It's good to look at what's new out there, what tools are used, and different techniques for doing things. But then you've got now, you know, certifications tied to this. For example, is Certified Ethical Hacker Certification, which is offered by the Certificate Authority. It's actually called EC Council. Now, we all know, you know, when we say Certificate Authority, for the most part, we all have the nightmarish vision of the invasion of the Microsoft certified people. But it's kind of interesting in the way things have somewhat changed, and that, you know, change is inevitable. But you know, they're not. There's a lot of certification authorities out there now that are not product specific. You know, they're not. They're selling a certification. They're not selling that you're certified to work any one specific product, which kind of cracks me up, because for the most part, that's really where the market kind of started, with, you know, the Suns, the IBMs, so on, HPs, the Checkpoints, and different security products. So, you know, early on during the .com heyday, you started seeing these hacking books out in Barnes and Nobles, right? And you started seeing just a very small handful of consulting companies that were known as black hatters to start, you know, now serious consulting firms. And of course, this goes way, way back in the history of hacking here. But and when I say way back, I mean 20 years ago, not necessarily way back. But and with that, you kind of saw, you know, through the last 10 or so years, more and more of these type of classes being offered, more of these type of this type of subject matter actually being discussed and or being part of a conference.
Right, and we should
any number of different professional conferences as well as specific conferences.
And we should probably we're going to come back to that in a minute anyway. So let's not go too far on it now. We'll come back and approach that after we get out of the show and tell stuff, because there was also some other stuff that you've been working on lately. I mean, and I've mentioned before about the DEF CON meetings.
Yes,
so
how
is that
down
going
here in South Florida? Which is basically, you know, DEF CON, I think the groups were, at least to give you a little bit of background, the groups were created much like the 2600 groups, much like, as you guys know out there, the politics between, you know, some DEF CON and 2600 and or other groups, you know, not necessarily liking each other too much. The big debate between the DEF CON groups was that it wouldn't turn into a party, or that no one would be shunned out regardless of the fact that they were feds or they were whatever. It was a discussion on security, and then the door was wide open to whoever wanted to come in and do a presentation and or sit in and listen on any specific subject. So, you know, all the groups, you know, started about 2 years ago nationwide, and now internationally, have been doing just that. And I think, you know, everybody's doing a pretty good job. You know, at least I know myself in Atlanta, I'm putting together good, you know, I know the gentleman who does the Atlanta meetings and whatnot. I know we're kind of on the same path, which, much like what you do with Binary Revolution, is really more than anything else to collaborate amongst us and, you know, get a lot of the information out there from different points of views. And, you know, 100, 200, 500 minds are better than one, especially on the, you know, the subject matter that we all are interested in. So there's just so many different places to go, you know, hardware and software and, you know, wetware. So
yeah, and you know what? This kind of goes back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, the competition thing. I mean, I go to the DC meeting.
Oh, exactly.
And you've
it's
come
all
to,
good.
The 20-
I go to the 2600 meeting.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, so, it's always all good. And, you know, there's always good conversation. There's always something good to learn. You know, and I guess, you know, the key there is, you know, to have some sort of order in the sense of actually making it a useful, you know, time or useful amount of your time that you can sit there and, you know, learn and chat with others. And at the same time, you know, it's obviously, needless to say, great networking with other people who love what we all love. So
right. Yeah, exactly. And we even go out of our way to schedule them on different days so that there is not a competition or overlap or anything like that.
Absolutely.
So I've been to, you know, to all the... It's kind of a drive for me to get down there to Hack City.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a drive for me to get my 2600 meeting as well. So they're really not too bad to go to once a month. So, you know, it's worth it. Even if you can't make all of them, go to a meeting once in a while. I keep saying that on the show all the time, but it's just because I have such... You know, like you said, you meet a lot of people that you get along with, you have a lot in common with. So, and you know, even for our 2600 meeting upcoming, I've already got someone who's going to be a new person, hopefully, who says they're going to try to come to the meeting for the first time. So there's always new people coming in, too. So, you know,
absolutely.
What? It's about...
Yeah, definitely make it out to the meeting. I mean, I teach, you know, just to give you an idea, in the last 6 months, over 250, you know, IT people. And, you know, in teaching a hacking class, you know, what I tell them is there's no way to make a hacker in 5 days.
Yeah, absolutely.
I teach you all I want to teach you, but you're neither a hacker when you walked in here or you're not. You know what I mean? And you're going to walk out a much better educated system administrator or network administrator or system programmer. But
hopefully just open their mind while they're there.
Exactly. Or, you know, hopefully, you know, kind of have a zen moment and go, oh, I can see things that way too. You know,
right.
Which is more of an offensive point of view, but you know, it make the whole thing a little bit more interesting. But in teaching those folks, I always tell them, I mean, I expect to see you guys out there on the mailing list, on the forums. I expect to see your names or your, you know, whatever, however you want to address yourself. But the main, you know, the most important part of a class like the ones we teach, which are expensive 5 day, you know, classes, is when you get out, what you do with that information and how much more you take it to the next level. So, you know, one question, you know, Stank, that I'm always asked and have gotten from a couple of media outlets too in interviews is how do you know you're not teaching them, you know, you're not teaching this group of people how to be bad, you know? And, you know, I think it's kind of a...
Because there's nothing inherently bad about hacking.
Well, that's number one, and when you know, that's the first thing I tell them is there's nothing bad about hacking. On the contrary, the bad part is, you know, the companies that are selling us crappy products. Bottom line, you know,
right.
And they're not testing them. You know what I mean? There's no QA. I mean, you QA, you know, a writer has somebody else look at the book before they put it out. For God's sake, you know.
Right, and QA, of course, quality assurance.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, do some quality assurance. Make sure your stuff is quality and it's not crap, really. I mean, I can't tell you how many horror stories I've seen. So, you know, that's really what it's all about. But the second thing is, you know, we may show and follow a process, and what I'd like to do here, and you tell me this is a good idea, is I'll give you a little background on what these classes are typically based on and what kind of content is usually covered. And, you know, kind of take you by a step-by-step of...
Yeah, that'll be perfect. Let me spit out... Was there anything else you wanted to cover in the show and tell?
No, that's good.
Okay, let me spit out, because mine's very short, actually, because working on a project with you, which you kind of just dropped anyway, but we'll just let it go at that. I didn't know if you wanted to drop it. That's why I was leaving it nameless.
Oh, yeah, I know, Tim. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, the APT. But not only that, but I'm studying for some certifications myself, or quite a few of them, actually, and I probably shouldn't take on so much at once, but I'm really excited to do a few certifications upcoming. So I literally, when I got home today, had two packages sitting on my front porch of some of the study guides for stuff. And I got some other information. So I'm basically made sure to get this stuff before I leave for Freaknik coming up so that I'm going to be actually studying. I'm going to have this material with me, studying on the plane to and from, and any kind of downtime I have there, if any. I'm going to be studying for some certifications. So that's really, you know, it's a good segue. Let's just jump right back into, you want to talk about a specific class, like the certified ethical hacking?
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's,
because, you know what, let me preface this quickly, because I've talked about this on the show before, and I'm pretty sure you've heard that episode. And I'm going to come out, and let me make, I'll put this question first. I wanted to ease into it, but I'm going to jump right into it first. My only problem with the class, because, see, I'm all about educating people. I'm all about teaching anybody and everybody, whether they're suits, sellout security officers, whatever, you know, whatever they are, I'm all about helping and educating them. That's that part I'm great with. My one big problem with this class, okay, and you defend this, you explain this to me, who in the hell certifies this? If I certified it, if you get a hacking group like DDP, or you get an agency that has a reputation and a background, somebody who has hacking, like I don't know, Cult of the Dead Cow, the Ghetto Hackers, some group who has credibility as hackers or in the hacking community to certify it, I would have a lot more respect for this. Who in the hell certifies this, and why should I give it any credibility? And I don't mean that in a harsh way. I mean that in a seriously explain that.
Well, I think, you know, you and me talking here as El Diablo and Stank Dog, no doubt about it. You know, it doesn't mean anything to either of us. It honestly doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't mean that because somebody has gone through the certification, who the hell are these people? No doubt about it. You know, EC Council. Who is EC Council? EC Council is a certification authority, basically. In many, what is a certification authority? You know, I might get my butt kicked at some point or another for saying this, but for the most part, a lot of it has to do with marketing. Is there any value to certification and certification authorities? There's no doubt there's a value there. So let me say that. But at the same time, what is, for the most part, a cert company? And that's very much a marketing company, because what do you want to do with certifications? You want to have enough people of them have these certifications and value these certifications to then require them for jobs. That just like, you know, a bachelor's degree, just like, you know, having gone to high school, okay? So that's obviously the goal. And how do you reach a goal like that? Marketing. So marketing and PR is what, for the most part, these companies are like. However, they do certainly try, it seems, to, you know, make their certifications worth something. I'll be honest, the first iterations of the CEH, I certainly myself dogged and certainly thought it was crap, you know. You know, how can a 50 or 75 question test prove that you're a hacker, much less, you know, this name, Certified Ethical Hacker.
Right, and that's something else I was going to come up to later, too.
Well, you know, that's an oxymoron. What ethics are you going by? Not by, you know, Stephen Levy's book, which is, for the most part, you know, hackers, computer, heroes of the computer revolution, considered to be kind of the hacker ethic. So
yeah, and that's basically the question is, when you say ethical hacker, whose ethics are you talking about? Everyday, your everyday person's ethics? The computer security officer, his version of ethics? Or a hacker's ethics, which is, again, kind of comes back to if this was from a hacking source that somehow certified it, which it would carry no weight in the professional world. I know that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not naive. I understand that part of it. But,
well, you know, to be honest, I'm not exactly sure that that's necessarily true. I don't think anybody's tried it. I think you've got people who have been successful at dealing with both sides of things, like, you know, like Dark Tangent and DEF CON, you know, and Jeff Moss and Black Hat. It's, you know, they have been able to pull it off. Never like that. Never have you seen, or I wouldn't rule it out that, you know, you'd have a hacker group actually put out a certification, you know. But for the most part, they try to, you know, they try to make it look like a business, a nonprofit group or whatever. But it gets into business, and obviously that's one thing that hacker groups are not.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm actually writing a note here to myself. Might be looking into that.
But yeah, no, absolutely. you know, it's still certainly a new thing, certification in this realm, because there isn't one product. You know what I mean? You're not learning how to use one product per se. We make, you know, we're covering 10 or 20 products, or, you know, any number of different things. Hell, you can't call exploit products. You can't, you know, you're covering so many different things. And
well, from the security officers and the network administrator standpoint, you can almost call, not really products, but you can call them specific topics for the class. And maybe we should do that. Maybe we should kind of look at an overview of the class itself.
So let's look at that.
Like, certified ethical hacking class.
Well, ethical hacking class is based on a couple of things. Number one is their common body of knowledge or common book of knowledge, which is really their course materials.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two different ways or two different partnerships out there with the folks who are the certification authority, the EC Council, which actually is the International Council of E-Commerce Consultants. They offer the curriculum through a number of different partners throughout the world. In the U.S., however, they are primarily offered by one big company in 10 school, and they're the ones that primarily do a lot of the CEH certification training, but they don't use their curriculum per se. They do use pieces of the information that's in their curriculum, but the test is based on their on this curriculum, this course material that they created. It is also loosely based on the OSTM, which is the Open Source Security Testing Manual, or Methodology Manual, SS1TMM. the OSTM is a methodology that can be used for doing security testing. And I say security testing, not penetration testing, because it is much more high level, I think, than just saying penetration testing. So it's kind of based on those two things when it comes to from a curriculum base, but it also has very much of a hacking taste to it. You know, the objectives of this type of a class is really to get these students to think outside the box, and I know we've all heard that enough
right.
times, but excuse me, get them to develop, you know, kind of a hacker's mindset, which, like I said, neither you walk in with it or you don't. You know, some of you may hate you, but again, you usually walked in with it. Now, the other thing is, again, all this methodology approach or the methodical approach to doing security testing, and then a lot of the fundamental skills that they need to know. What is a hacker doing from the outside? What can a hacker do from the outside? What kind of tools are? And this is where I'd like to make a distinction, and I think you'd appreciate this. From this moment on,
okay.
I like to call, you know, I call these people that I keep saying the word hacker because I don't want to make them the same mistake that everybody else makes. These are attackers, okay? So I'm teaching them what can an attacker do.
Right, absolutely.
I don't know if that person's a hacker by my terms and by my standards, or if that person's a packet monkey or, you know, an idiot for all I care.
Right.
I know if he's, you know, this person, I'm really going to teach these people how to deal with being proactive in security, which is really, truly it. That's what it's really all about is, you know, for God's sake, be proactive. That's all. You know, in teaching them how to actually test their own environments, you know, that hopefully is going to give them the ability to secure their own environments, know where their weaknesses are, and work on those weaknesses. Stank, there's something called acceptable risk, you know?
Right, absolutely.
You have to run a web server.
Yeah, I mean, you know what, I can even give you an example of that. We had some problems with the gallery on binrev.com.
Hmm?
When we put that gallery up, we knew that there was a risk. It was an acceptable risk as far as we were concerned. We weighed the balance of whether the risk was acceptable enough. It was limited to the gallery that somebody could have, you know, just basically been an ass, and eventually they were. Well, yes, you absolutely have an acceptable risk, but at the same time, you have to teach people how to judge that acceptable, what is acceptable.
Oh, and more importantly than that even is to know that there's a risk.
Right, exactly, and that is something I'll give credit that this class does very well.
And that's kind of really it. You know, there's another thing is, yeah, we expose them to all the tools that are used both by, you know, your attackers and by security professionals.
Well, you know, let me walk through the class with me. You correct me or push me. Let me ask the question step by step. Like, for example, day one, when you start off in the class, do you teach the hacker ethic? Do you teach what that is?
No, not in this class, and certainly not in the Certified Ethical Hacker curriculum.
So therefore, they are not explained that the ethical hacking part of this is not the hacker ethics is not what it is. It's teaching ethical hacking from a business ethics standpoint.
Absolutely, because they are marketing the Certified Ethical Hacker. If you go to EC Council's website, which is eccouncil.org, and you look at the certification levels, and you see the Certified Ethical Hacker certification, it's hit you right in the face. You've got a quote from an American author, and you've got, you know, links to this and that and the other thing, and check us out here and check us out there. But, you know, obviously, as you can tell, they put on an event called Hacker Halted, which they haven't held one here in the U.S. yet. The Certified Ethical Hacker and the Certification Authority as a whole are basically much larger in Europe and Asia than they are here.
Yeah, and I got to be honest. I mean, I can say this to you because we're friends. I can be honest and say that offends me a little bit that they are capitalizing on the word. I wish they called it certified ethical, or I wish they called it certified security testing or something like that. It feels like they're capitalizing and taking advantage and selling the word hacker. But ironically,
there's no doubt about it.
We're being exploited is what it feels like, you know? And I mean...
There's no doubt about it, but, you know, at least the way to look at it is we have very little control over, you know, the exploitation of the hacker name, because it's already been exploited and already been pretty much set in the wrong idea everywhere. So to have a business company of any kind, you know, a certification authority to actually throw the name hacker in there, believe it or not, has its ups and downs. While it is marketing hacker, at the same time, that can cost you business. And I can tell you from the other side, too, there's a lot of businesses and or government entities that don't want to deal with anything with the word hacker in it.
Yeah.
Or certainly don't want to send their individuals to a class that is going to teach hacking, because they only know it as the term that the media portrays it as.
Even if you put the word ethical in front of it.
Even if you put the word ethical in front of it, I think they still have a harder time. Well, you know, it's a give and take. I said it's got its ups and downs. And,
right.
You know, it's...
Well, I mean, I do know that one of the things that you do cover in Certified Ethical Hacking is the word cracker comes in.
The old
hacker versus cracker. I mean, do you talk... Does black hat, white hat, does that come up in the class?
Basically we tell them, well, this is the term hacker and what it means. And the way we describe it is really that hacker is a term that is used to describe different types of computer experts. That's it. Mm-hmm. It is sometimes extended to mean any kind of expert, especially in the connotation, particularly detailed knowledge with regards to circumventing limits. And that's really the way we talk about what the term hacker really means.
All right. I think I can live with that.
And then from there, you know, we basically go and give them a little bit of the hacker history in a very brief timeline in the current class. But, you know, say, you know, where does this term really kind of come from? And, you know, I think we'd all agree that it pretty much we can go as far back as, you know, 1700s or, you know, in French, you know, before I can know what, you know, hacking or that the same term would mean, but obviously we can go all the way back to, you know, 1393.
Well, from a philosophical standpoint, yeah. But, you know, as it stands today, you know, hacking is preceded by the word computer hacker.
Exactly.
You know,
and the way, you know, at least personally I look at it is, you know, where does hackers come from as we know them today? Pretty much they're rooted with MIT in the 60s.
Right, and that's, I think that's an absolute true statement. For those of you who don't know your history, that's probably where it really, really started to take root.
Well, these, you know, and to kind of give you a little bit more there, abbreviated timeline, in 1961, MIT got their PDP-1. And the PDP-1 was, you know, a supercomputer that was given to the university and the Tech Model Railroad Club. Basically, this was a group of people that started working with this PDP-1 and applying local model railroad slang to computers as they were working with this thing to do things that were outside of the scope of what this computer was there for, and hence, you know, hacking it up, you know, or basically doing these things. The term actually goes back to November 20th, 1963 issue of the Tech, which is the MIT student paper.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with telephone services being messed around with. And it has to do with things like tying up all the lines at the Harvard and MIT buildings and making long-distance calls by charging them to local radar stations or installations, that sort of thing. So,
right. They're classic stories.
Yeah, they're definitely classic stories, and that's really where the kind of term comes from. And it obviously doesn't mean anything bad, you know, but, you know, again, you were talking about the hacker ethic, and what is the hacker ethic? You know, access to computers and anything which might teach you something about the way the world works should be unlimited in total.
Right, and but see, you know, I just wish that it's not only the information, but it's the do no harm attitude, cause no damage, do no harm, free information, knowledge and learn, experiment, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why, that was kind of a setup question, because that's why I'm excited about this new project that we're working on, this new class.
Absolutely.
Because I really, really am looking forward to this, because we are going to kind of address some of these topics.
Absolutely.
That I think is a little bit more appropriate and a little bit more valuable, frankly.
It is.
I think this will be better than the certified ethical hacking.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. You know, and again, I'm sure there will be eventually some certification tied to it, but it doesn't take away from the curriculum. But
the curriculum comes first.
Exactly,
you know?
Which is the big difference with, to be honest, with a lot of the stuff that comes out of the certification authorities is you know, the curriculum doesn't necessarily come first. There's a lot of other things going on that may come first, and they're all mandated by the marketplace, you know?
Right.
Hackers are not really mandated by the marketplace or anything else for that matter. So it's, it's really kind of staying on top of things. We go through cracker, the definition of a cracker.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I sidetracked this earlier. Yeah, what is covered in the class? You do some terminology at the beginning.
Yeah, so we use some terminology, you know, in general security terminology, as well as categories of hackers, you know, the black hat, white hat, gray hat stuff, and then ultimately, at least I personally end up with attacker, even though that's not exactly in the curriculum. I say, you know, whenever I see the word hacker, let's just take that out so that we don't confuse ourselves with whether that's a negative or positive thing. A hacker is not a negative thing, so... An attacker is just somebody who, to me, is a cracker actualized, and that's what we're teaching in class.
Right. I very much appreciate that. I respect that a lot.
Let's throw some names here. If you want to, you know, who I consider a real hacker is Brian Kernighan, Dennis Ritchie, Bill Joy, Ken Thompson, Richard Stallman, Steve Wozniak, Steve Jobs, Linus Torvald. All these people are real hackers.
Right. I agree completely. So. Completely.
And, you know, if you want to talk about real attackers, whether, you know, some I'd like to say are not, but Kevin Mitnick is an attacker, and Fiber Optic is an attacker, and Acid Freak and Mafia Boy are attackers.
Let's use the word was. Let's go past tense.
Yeah.
Let's hope that, you know, I think things have changed.
Well, no doubt. If I didn't say that, Kevin was an attacker, because obviously his actions showed... or were considered, at least by the law, to be an attack on information. So, but again, the point is, attackers, as far as computer systems are concerned, can be anybody. Hackers cannot just be anybody. Especially if you want to do a little profiling here, the sophistication of attacks over the last 10 years has, you know, increased. The sophistication of today's attacks are much more sophisticated, obviously, than, you know, Kevin's attack. However, nowadays, you certainly have a lot more script kiddies or packet monkeys out there who can use any tool that's available on the Internet for free and just cause havoc for no reason.
Yeah, I think our favorite word is packet trash.
Yeah, you've got lots of packet trash. So, that's kind of the point, and, you know, in my opinion, there's, you know, to a degree, even less and less of what I guess you and I consider real hackers out there, because, you know, a lot of them don't even, you know, honestly understand what a port is, or, you know, they can certainly fire up any number of different tools and point it at an IP address or at a range of IP addresses, and certainly there's enough suckers out there to get, you know, to get their computers penetrated. But needless to say, you know, the point is, today's attackers can be anybody. It could be your next-door neighbor. It could be a student. Today's hackers could be anybody, too.
Right, and that's a very good point, and something we've tried to do on the show many times is, I mean, we hold some pretty surprising jobs and work for some pretty surprising companies. I mean, you'd be shocked and amazed. I mean, if I ran down a list of just DDP members, you would be very shocked and amazed to know where some of these guys work and what they do for a living.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, we are everywhere, and we are of any and every age. That old cliche about how we're all sitting in our mom's basement, that's just not true. It's just not true.
Oh, no, not at all. No doubt about it.
Now, we kind of broke off on a tangent again there somehow. Let's go back to the class content. Now, obviously, we're not going to go through the slides or go through the class. It's 5 days or whatever, 7 days, however long they last. But, like, what's one of the first... like, you go through terminology, you go through some history, you go through, you know, talking about the stuff we just did. What's the first hands-on thing you do? What do you ease them into some of the actual hands-on stuff?
After we do kind of the introduction to professional hacking and then kind of methodical approaches to it. And
after you show them where the bathrooms are.
Exactly, and, you know, the fax machine and, you know, what time to take a nap and all that. No. Then basically the next thing, and that's where kind of we ease them into it, is setting up a professional hacker's attack network. And by that I mean, you know, all of the caveats and or other issues that may exist in setting your network up for full packet captures when doing a penetration test. You know, firewalls are an issue, NATing is an issue, DNAT, SNAT, you know, PAT, you name it. So what are all the issues with that? And then right around there, they have to actually compile a couple of tools. Of course, you can imagine a lot of people have to compile the tool.
Right, I was going to say, when you say compile, then are they doing this in a Unix environment?
Yeah, they are actually given both a Unix or a Linux and a Windows environment. So they go back and forth, which is very much what a penetration tester would do, a professional hacker, call it whatever you want to. But you know, they actually have both environments. Then we get into immediately after that, we get into competitive intelligence, and we show them.
Or as I like to call it, fingerprinting, footprinting.
Yep, that's pretty much it. It's what we encompass it within the footprinting or fingerprinting the client or fingerprinting the target, okay? So we start with competitive intelligence. It's pretty good. They get a few examples, and they get a lot of different information with competitive intelligence, and then it moves into information security testing, which has to do a lot more with things that are just outside, not necessarily computer related, but just security testing as a whole, physical security and things of that nature, because they often fall into the same realm. Then we get into social engineering attacks and explain all the different means of doing social engineering.
So they actually set up a firewall and set up their own servers towards the beginning of class?
They actually, what they have is their student machines. And in their student machines, they have Windows and they have Linux.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a target range. And what they do on their local machines is they update certain software or install certain software. So at least they go through the steps of, for example, checking MD5 hashes, compiling the software from C code, or RPMing a package, or, obviously a Windows install is easy enough. Next, finish.
All right.
But... you know, that's what they have to go through with a few different tools to actually understand the different ways of installing the software and the differences between shell scripts and so on and so forth. Because as you can imagine, some of these people don't come with much of a Unix background. So this is definitely, the intention of this is for individuals entering the security space, at least the current class. That's why I'm so excited, like you said, in working with you and everything else, but in this advanced class, because it doesn't go as much into a lot of the methodology stuff. It goes straight into the tools and techniques and a lot of labs.
Just out of curiosity, and speak up a little bit, just out of curiosity, totally off-the-wall question, just to stir up controversy among our listeners, what distro of Linux do you have on those?
Gentoo.
Gentoo. Wow. Oh, man, are we going to get an email?
Gen 2.
There's some diehard Gen 2 fans out there, and there's some haters out there too. That's totally curious as which one. I don't think I ever looked when I was. Yeah, I don't think I ever noticed that.
I mean, I'll tell you what. If you're new to Linux, Gen 2 ain't too good for you. And if you're old to Linux, it might still frustrate you. But for the most part, what I discovered in working with so many different distributions and in so many different production environments is with Gen 2, it's just performance, man. I mean, the thing is compiled from scratch. Everything is, you know, there's not a binary put on that box that isn't compiled from scratch, and MD5s are checked. So both from a security perspective, but also from a performance perspective, everything installed is specifically for that box and tuned for that box.
And I actually had heard that Gen 2 was a lot more user-friendly these days, but we won't go into a distro wars here. I didn't mean to take...
Once you're in it, it's the install that's a royal pain. I mean, or that can be considered because, it can take a day or two, depending on what you're talking about doing with the system.
Interesting. All right, anyway, that was just kind of curiosity questions. Now, what are some of the stuff like towards the end of the class? Like, what are some of the last things you go from?
I'll give you some of the more social engineering crypto for basics or crypto basics for these hackers here. You know, a lot of these guys don't understand the difference between asymmetric and symmetric systems, or the use of hybrids, or the implementation of those systems. What is SHA? What is how is SSL accomplished? Or what is the SSL? Process and so on and so forth. So we kind of cover all of that stuff and go into communications testing, war dialing. We certainly do teach them what tools to use for doing war dialing. They certainly don't get to see them other than with a few screenshots, because that would be outside the scope of a class like this. But then you get into protocols and explain ICMP, UDP, and TCP. And then after you've explained all this, you get more into the technical information gathering. Done information or very passive information gathering. So now you get into technical footprinting and enumeration. So things like SNMP, wireless security and all the issues there, sniffing, keystroke monitoring, sniffing and passwords, password cracking, Windows password weaknesses. It's actually a very interesting long chapter, and I say very hacking-like on Netcat and different uses of Netcat, and they certainly have enough of a chance to do all kinds of interesting labs with Netcat.
And again, just to remind our listeners, a lot of this stuff I know people know very well already, but just keep in your mindset as we're reading through some of these things, as El Diablo is telling you some of these things, that this is stuff they're teaching to network administrators and stuff. These people don't know this, so don't take for granted the content of this. These people are going to this class is because they don't know it, and they are learning this stuff so that they can do penetration testing and analysis on their computers and stuff. So this is all good, new, useful information to them.
Oh, I've certainly had people in class who, in fact, have told me, that they considered themselves advanced prior to coming to class,
mm-hmm.
and that they often performed audits or scans. A big misconception between a penetration test. That's not running a vulnerability scanner like Nessus at an IP address. That's not a penetration test. So a lot of, big companies do this, and they call them audits, and they call them assessments, which is very different than a penetration test, different in pricing, different in scope, different in resources. But the point is that's a lot of these people come with that in mind, is that, it's, how to use Nessus or how to use ISS, or how to use SARA, or how to use NMAP, or how to use Ethereal, or EtherCAP, or whatever.
All of the above.
Exactly. So the point is, first of all, if we did it that way, we can never get done in 5 days. Because there's enough tools here. In fact, there's security sites with tools and exploits and so on and so forth. So there's a whole community of us. So, it's bringing them in. It's bringing them into that, and also making them realize that, this isn't like being part of Microsoft TechNet,
Right.
You have to really kind of stay on top of a lot of different things, get on mailing lists, be active, and so on and so forth. So, certainly a lot of people come into this class saying they're advanced, and they come into class and, for example, they won't know very simple Linux commands. Or, something like DHCP somebody who said they were advanced could do, but they just haven't messed with Linux in a while. You know what I mean? So
right.
Or saying a lot of these people who go out and do a lot of these system audits. And I think it's very important for these classes to be out there and teach them the difference between all the manual validation that is done when doing penetration tests or ethical hacking, call it whatever you want to call it, but when you're being tested from the outside to the inside, or even from the inside to the inside, what exactly is going on? And it's not just a matter of running tools. That's a big misconception. If that's the same problem I've got with packet trash?
Packet trash, yeah.
I mean, that's the whole problem we have, so we certainly don't want more packet trash.
Right.
We certainly don't want system administrators turning into packet trash. So that's kind of the point here. Show them what vulnerability scanning is and what host scanning is and network discovery and, you know, introduce them to exploitation. What's the differences with exploitation in Windows and Linux and, you know, as specific applications like IIS and Microsoft SQL Server, you know, and really nowadays it's all web applications. So by the end of the class, I've kind of thrown them out there a little bit, but by the end of the class, you're getting into, you know, hacking web applications and hacking SQL and, finally report writing, because in the professional world, when you're doing this professionally, it's for what? One or two? They're paying for two things: your knowledge and experience, which I kind of consider one there, even though it's two, and the report, the final report. That's what they're paying for. So report writing being a royal pain in many people's behinds, but ultimately that is what clients pay for when they take on these services like penetration testing. So.
Yep. Let me see how we are on time here. We're starting to run low here, so what is there anything else specifically in that class that you want, that you really wanted to bring up content-wise?
I think content-wise it's,
let's emphasize, just in case the point didn't come across, that you do a lot of labs.
Yes, we do.
You do a lot of hands-on labs, and you have an interesting setup, technically, that is, to accomplish this. Can you go into a little detail about that?
Well, I've got a couple of interesting setups. There is a target range, and the target range are three made-up companies with real primary and secondary DNSs and real mail servers and real A records back there and all that good stuff, and they all provide a different service, and they all have different operating systems. They all have different business justifications that they provide for those companies that are all made up. And the idea here is that students get to learn the tools and all that good stuff in class between the normal hours of 8:30 and 5:30. But after that, then it kind of becomes boot camp style. In fact, that's the big term for these classes, is boot camps. And at that point, all of the information they learn during the day is to attack a target range with very realistic systems. So, you know, you've got clients going back or servers going back to NT4.0 all the way up to 2003 that all provide a different service, very much like you see in a real-world environment. And at the same time, you've got different distros of Unix as well as different distros of Linux providing different services. And
so you give them targets?
We give them targets, and the targets actually have different trust relationships. So there's certain things you can't see from, you know, just any target. You got to get through the right target and, you know, be able to get on that target to see the rest of it, you know? So
right.
There's a lot of that. I wouldn't say that it's easy in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, certainly a lot of students can get lost, and a lot don't if they keep up with the class. The success rate, at least for my classes, is certainly high.
Yeah, I was actually getting ready to ask that. So when it's all said and done, and these people leave the class, well, first of all, the last thing they do is they take the exam there on the spot, correct?
They take the exam right there on the spot. It is a prime Prometric exam, which means it is offered through Prometric, which is online test, and can be taken at any prime facility. So it is proctored. It's 125 questions. They are multiple choice, multiple answer, or true or false. There is no target range for the test. And to be honest with you, I have had discussions with these folks about this in the past because I was also involved with another certification based on the OSTM. And the he made a valid point, which is, again, they are a certification authority. They are a marketing company. Call them what you want, but that's their business. And he made a very valid point, which is by having these target ranges when you're trying to take a certification internationally, it makes it very difficult for something like hacking. And that is a valid point because, you know, systems are going to be taken down quite often.
Right.
And, you know, how are you able to provide 24/7 support to make sure these systems all are, the integrity of these systems is there for the test questions to be correct? Because then the answers to those questions vary on the integrity of the systems.
Right.
And that is true. That's a complex issue. But, you know, the 125 question exam now, I wouldn't say that it's easy after seeing many, you know, SANS exams and other exams in the realm of this hacking stuff. So after seeing all these exams, I wouldn't say that the new CEH, which I believe is version 3.0, is not is not by any means easy. If you haven't been, if you're not active in looking and using tools and looking at the actual packets they produce, not just using the tool, but actually knowing what an attack looks like from one side and the other side.
Right.
Then there's a good possibility you don't pass the exam if you haven't had that kind of experience. A lot of the questions may be as easy as something tool specific, what type of tool would you use to do to do password cracking against a SAM file, and you know, obviously with multiple choice, two of those were knocked right off, and the other two, hey, you know. The question is it online? Is it offline? What kind of attack am I doing? Is it dictionary? Is it hybrid? Is it, you know?
Right.
So that would be kind of one of the more easier questions, believe it or not. And the more complicated questions would be, you know, actual hex conversions to ASCII and things like that. So I can't say that it's necessarily easy. I can also say that it doesn't make you a hacker either.
Right, right. And we definitely said that at the top of the show. But ideally, you know, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but ideally, by the end of these 5 days, not only are they now educated enough to pass this exam, but hopefully their mind is open as to what, not only how specifically, you know, current things can be done, but hopefully open their minds so that they see the thought process and the potential weaknesses. So, you know, 6 months or a year down the road, when new exploits come up and new security problems arise, you know, if they just memorized the steps and went through the motions and passed the test, it's worthless, just like any other test in any other environment, computer or otherwise. Hopefully, if they develop a mindset to recognize and learn and adapt, and by the end of the class, hopefully that's something that they've picked up.
Oh, certainly. I mean, to be honest, I think there's, regardless of your skills, and knowledge and or expertise, there's certainly value in all of these classes offered by any one of these vendors. I think the delivery of the classes certainly vary, and the curriculum for the most part is very much the same. Some are a little bit more ahead of the game and some are more behind, but regardless of the level of knowledge and experience that you have, you're definitely going to get something out of these classes, and not more than just a certification, which to me is more important, that you get what you need to take back, you know? And certainly they take that back. The big question is, do they walk away with a hacker mindset? And,
hopefully.
You know, that's certainly not something that we can put our finger on.
Hopefully they do, and we've got some other ideas we're going to implement.
Yep.
To help lead that along without, again, going into too much detail, but some things we're going to change on the fifth day, or at least try on the fifth day and see if we can open that mind up a little bit before that happens. Now, let me just do one question here because we are running pretty low here. Let's say that our listeners, even after hearing all this and they've heard some examples of the content, Let's say our listeners feel comfortable and they think they can pass this test with flying colors. Can our listeners go to a site, one of these certification sites, and pay X number of dollars? I mean, how much would it cost for, you know, obviously the executives and stuff who don't know this and they have to come to the class, they pay a lot more for the classes themselves. Certification's part of it. It's the whole experience. But let's say our listeners know their stuff and just want to have that certification.
Yeah, they can go out, and the cost of the exam is $250, and it is at Prime Prometric. You basically go on to primeprometric.com, and they have locations all over the world. They probably have multiple locations in your city.
So you can register online, pay the money, and then go to that one of those proctors?
Exactly. You go to the location where they put you in a little, you know, box, and they give you the exam. And that's a Prime Prometric Center. The other option, too, is you can let the U.S. partner, any U.S. partner who offers a CEH, if you go to eccouncil.org and you click through to, you know, find out who's offering it, you can go to any partner in the United States who offers the CEH, the biggest of them being Intent School, and say, I want to come on the Friday that you have a scheduled class to take the exam. And they can. They can certainly do that.
Great. And you know what? If anybody does follow up and decide to do that, by all means, let us know. Or if you've already done that, frankly, email us and let us know what you thought or what you think and what your experiences were.
Oh, like I always tell students is, you know, always, you know, let us know how you did. Let us know what you think you went wrong or went right. You know, one thing I will tell you about this exam is it's not aceable. Meaning there's no way to get 100% on that exam. 70% is passing. But having seen the exam enough times, having taken it myself, it's impossible to get 100%. If you get anything above an 85, you know, let me know how the hell you did it because of the way the
wow.
exam is actually structured.
Well, that's awfully intimidating now.
I didn't mean to do that, but that's true. I haven't seen anyone pass with anything higher than an 85.
Wow, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Now, you know what? Before, I mean, we're going to wrap it up here, but I don't want to leave anything out. If there's anything specifically that you wanted to mention about it, I mean, you know, it's kind of a touchy topic. I mean, really, my only thing is, you know, who are they to certify it? And, that's my only point with it, and I accept the fact that it's geared towards companies and security officers and stuff like that. I just wish it didn't have the word hacking. You know what? Reality says otherwise. You know, what are you going
to
do?
Yeah, and just the same way that they're using it in a positive, you know, in a connotation so that they can make money on it, you know. At the same time, we also have to look at it as, you know, as hackers looking at it going, hey, you know, they're not using it for a negative connotation.
No, they're not. I mean, I guess it's fairly neutral as far as that goes. And you know what? Another part of me says that, you know what? We should go out as hackers and get this. Because of the fact that, you know what? If they're going to use the name hacker in the title, we might as well take it and get it, use it to our advantage, take it and get the certified ethical hacking for yourself. You know, if they're going to use the name, you might as well take advantage of it and get this certification.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I really do believe...
It certainly sounds nice.
Yeah, I really do believe that that a lot of our listeners, a lot of people can pass this exam. And there are, you can obviously, well, I shouldn't say obviously, I assume there are study guides and things available that you could buy and study yourself. You don't have to go to a class.
Oh, yeah. I'd say a couple of study guides, you know, these companies put out tests that are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of companies out there like Test King that I know do it for a number of different things, and I know I'm not exactly sure if they do the CEH, but I can tell you that they're very close.
Okay.
They come very close to the way the exam is, so at least it leads you, you know, the most important thing with any exam, if any of you out there has ever taken an exam, is what? How the question is answered, is asked. If you can understand that, then, you know, if you understand the question, then there's a good chance you can, you know, have an answer. But if you can't understand the question, you're lost. And that's kind of the biggest thing with any exam is how do they pose these questions.
But it's still multiple choice.
It's still multiple choice, yep.
So you always got that chance.
Yep. Like I said, you know, two of those should come right off the top. If you know what you, you know, if you just have a clue. And then the hardest part is making a decision on the last two.
All right, good stuff. Good stuff. Well, let's wrap it up. We are pretty much full on time by the time we mix everything together. So I'll turn it over to you to give out any shouts. You can take the first shot. You take shouts.
I want to send, Gato, but he'll be listening in. So I want to send out a shout out to him and Yo-Yo Wayne and all the good peoples over at all the DEF CON groups. But needless to say, Stank, I want to thank you for having me on the show.
Nah.
Certainly look forward to being back with you. And certainly hope to get a lot of feedback back from people out there. And any questions, you know, we're here. We're here.
Yeah, and you know, that's, I'm glad you mentioned that because, yeah, email us. You know, our email address, it's about that time anyway, is radio@binrev.com. And if you do have any other questions about this, I'm sure you'd be happy to answer, respond.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two of them, so I will definitely, we'll pass it on, and we'll, I'm sure we'll have you on the show again sometime soon anyway. But, yeah, if there's any other questions that you have, or if you want to call up and say that you still don't agree with us, or you don't like it, or whatever, by all means, you know, email us and let us know.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
I'm sorry?
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and I'll definitely second the shout-outs to Elgato. Sent me some files that I was really waiting for, so definitely shouts to him. And again, to Joe, earlier we mentioned Joe doing the show notes for us now. That is tremendously helpful. So big, big shouts to him. Shout-outs to Natus. For those of you who have noticed, it's taken over oldschoolfreak.com. Old School Freak's back up. So if you haven't been there in a while, go check it out. There's some new text files up, and Natus is taking care of that. And to Dolomite and all of the crew at Freaknik, I will be seeing you this weekend. And our closing music tonight is from Slip Critical. And the track is called Home Computing. How fitting is that? And that is going to do it. So, El Diablo, thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Very educational. And you know what? A very professional show. We kept the cussing to a minimum.
Uh-huh.
We were honest, straightforward. We, you know, we brought up some topics that we didn't shy away from. So I think this is, all in all, this is a pretty good show. So, yeah, everybody's going to be at Freaknik. I will see you there Friday morning, 10 to 12. I'll be at the registration desk. And, of course, I'll be all over the conference anyway, so by all means, stop, say hi, shake hands. And if you're going to be there, I will see you then. And for the rest of you poor schleps that can't make it, we will see you all next week. Same hack time.
Same hack channel.
Welcome to the computer age. 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 Welcome to the 21st century. Some experts are even predicting that the home computer will eventually replace radio, TV, newspapers, and magazines. It will, in fact, be a real window on the world, an electronic communication center like nothing we've ever seen before. Welcome to the computer age.
That is exciting.